Hello and welcome to episode 33. My name's Tim Nagel and I'm the Manager of Workplace Relations Services here at VHIA. In this week's industrial roundup, I will provide you with an update on where things are with the EBAs. Firstly, the Nurses and Midwives Agreement. It's progressing quite well. As people would understand, most of the WIC processes are near completion. The focus has mainly been on the development of the SDPPWG process, and that group is focusing on such things as the management fatigue within our workforces, collaborative education programs for our nurses, amongst other things. The Health and Allied Services Management Administrative Workers is also undertaking that WIC process, which is going very positively. There are no significant issues arising other than the clerical translation, which we're focusing on for this October. The Health Professionals has also undertaken that WIC process, and there doesn't seem to be any substantial issues that have arisen. The classification translation was being the major one. The Mental Health Agreement has also been implemented. We're doing a lot of work with our members around the community workload management system or structure, and we've called for volunteers to participate in our working group to look at some of the issues around the implementation of that program. We're also looking for additional implementation issues, so if anyone does have anything that is concerning them, if they could let us know, that'd be great. The Medical Scientist Agreement has not yet been endorsed by government, so it is still with them. We're awaiting a timeline and we'll let members know as soon as possible what that timeline is. We're also developing an implementation plan, so we'll distribute that to members as soon as possible. The Maintenance Workers Agreement is getting close to finalisation. We think that we've got very close to an in-principle agreement, and we will circulate details of that shortly. Again, that hasn't been approved by government yet, so it is still a work in progress. In terms of the medical specialist and doctors in training negotiations, that continues. It's going slowly, but progress is being made. The other agreements that are just commencing include the general dentist, the specialist dentist, and also the dental therapist, dental hygienist, and oral health therapist. These three agreements are really waiting for approval by government of the management log, but we have had some discussions with the relevant unions in order to progress that process as soon as possible. The final agreement is the biomedical engineers. We are also awaiting government approval of the management log, but have not yet started the discussions with the union. That will occur over the next month or so. So that is the industrial roundup for this week. Thank you. Welcome to the weekly update, where we go in depth on a particular subject. Joining me today is Richard Corboy, Principal Workplace Relations Consultant. Welcome, Richard.
Thank you, Tim.
Richard, I don't know whether you've seen the show, no doubt you have, but the first order of business is unveiling the mystery box. Would you do the honours?
Well, it's unveiling the mystery object inside the box.
Correct.
Right, okay.
So, Richard, for the benefit of those listening on the audio, can you please describe what you see?
Certainly. We better turn it round, have a look at it, and it's stuck with blue tack. It looks like a mad scientist, but it's one of the Three Stooges. And is it Curly? It looks like Curly.
Larry. So exactly right, Richard.
It's Larry in what would have been a pharmacy jacket in the old days.
That's right. So luckily, the Three Stooges media people have decided to release the Three Stooges in medical scientist garment, which we've had today.
Technically, it's more pharmacy, but that's all right.
So what would you guess today's topic was?
Something to do with pharmacists and possibly something to do with the state of mental health.
So yes, today's topic is the Medical Scientist, Pharmacist and Psychologist Agreement 2016 to 2020.
Certainly, we'll pick up two of those groups anyway.
So where are we up to with the process, Richard?
We're waiting on government approval. It's been with the government for a little while. The process is they've got to approve it before we can actually do anything with it.
Yep. So once that approval occurs, what are the next steps?
Next steps will be doing the agreement process, which would involve making sure the document is correct. I picked up one typo today. And making sure that the supporting documents, which are the documents which include a summary of the key changes, any other documents that are referred to within the agreement, and also the voting material, are prepared and ready to be sent out.
So you talked about the voting material. So how will the ballot occur?
The ballots, we think, will occur through a company in Sydney called the Australian Electoral Company. I spoke with the union last week. We appear to have this 3,700 EFT, that with part-timers, we think it's around about 4,800. So that'll be done through an email process, and then we'll get the results.
So that's an electronic process?
It is. We used it for the general or the nurses agreement, and we found it particularly responsive when we had problems with the distribution of the agreement. So they were able to amend it very quickly.
Yeah. And so for those health services out there, given that the agreement's currently awaiting approval by government, what steps do they have to take at the moment?
Well, the first thing is to sit tight. We can't do anything till the government says that we can do something. Secondly, start to reflect upon where the target group exists. In this group, you've got large pathology services, but then you also got what are called smaller boutique services, like scientists in respiratory labs, where you could have, in the smaller rural areas, could have dietitians, fairly small in number, or psychologists. You could have medical physicists and genetic counsellors, clinical perfusionists. Again, these are sort of niche groups within a specialised hospital environment.
Sure. So what are the main changes in the draft of the proposed agreement?
The main changes in the agreement, I suppose the overriding feel is workload. The union had a very strong log of claims based upon workload and replacing staff. The other significant areas that were discussed was the adoption of the nurses' public holiday clause, and that meant that the penalties come back from 250 to 200%. It also means that Monday to Friday workers who only work Monday to Friday don't get the weekend holidays. And it also allegedly provides savings, which the government have to tell us, which will enable a fifth week of annual leave. So as a trade-off, less public holidays pays for the annual leave. Mm. The other areas, again, I talked about workload, go to roster protocols, mainly in 24/7 type environments. They have for medical scientists, grade one, grade two, when we looked at the demographics, there was a fairly large bunch of people at grade one, year seven. And so the union pressured the government about this. And so there is a progression from grade one to grade two. The last, I suppose, significant alteration to the entitlements is a revamping or an upgrading of the clinical supervision requirements for psychologists. In the last agreement, we didn't refer to numbers. We just referred to supervision, and that was controlled by APRA, which was 10 hours per year. In this agreement, it's 22 hours per year of individual supervision for grade one, grade twos. And for your grade three, grade four, grade five, you've got the 10-hour APRA with the additional 12 hours, again, 10 plus 12 equals 22, can be through processes like peer supervision. In other words, that they work with psychologists or they work with peers, they work in a group, etc. This can be counted towards supervision as long as it's recognised by APRA. Mm. There are, I suppose, other changes being what we call the common clauses. And because of the common clauses, the current schedules, which occupy something like 100 pages in the back of the book for org change, have been reduced down to a very small series of schedules where we've managed to cut out a lot of the processes, which from the 1990s regarding org change, and that'll streamline the process.
Yeah, because my understanding is that it wasn't every respondent to the agreement, but there was a limited number that had a schedule, and those schedules really operated quite differently to standardised practice these days.
Yes, they were very much the creatures of the 1990s, and because of that, they're also creatures of the aggregation of hospitals that occurred at that time. We had a very large hospital called the Inner and East Healthcare Network, and that literally went from Royal Melbourne right through to right through to Eastern Health, etc., all the way through. So the agreements were grouped together by the organisational arrangements that were at that time. So the Women's and Children's were together, the Inner and East became, that was then divided up, Women's and Children's, St Vincent's, INEA, and the Eastern Health Network. So then you had things like the Melbourne Western Northern Alliance, which wasn't really based on a network as such, it was based upon how they organised their support services at the time. Mm. So all these 1990s arrangements have mostly been undone. The market contestability clause, which literally is from the 1990s, where it arose out of the Geoff Kennett era, we couldn't agree on a change, so it's in there. So if you want to have a blast from the past, 1990s, just have a look at that particular schedule.
So the various schedules have largely been replaced by a standardised process?
Mainly, they have. But with the common clauses, we call them, for consultation and redundancy, there had to be tweakings because the previous or the current schedules had either clauses in there that were more advantageous, or they had a particular resonance with the HSU4 and they weren't willing to give that up.
Sure.
So when you look at the consultation clauses as compared to others, you'll find those tweakings are in there. They're not major, and I'd say by streamlining the schedules, we've got rid of an awful lot of gumph in the back of the agreement.
It's really a start from a different time, isn't it?
A different time, different time zone, I think. It was quite extraordinary. The redundancy schedules, again, pick up the VDP TSP, mainly in line with government policy. But again, there's a little bit of tweakings to reflect what was in the schedules.
Sure.
Because the schedules, even though they're for the major Melbourne metros, they covered something like 80% of the workforce.
Mm. So with those other standardised clauses, and we know from feedback that we've received from our membership that standardised clauses or consistent clauses across agreements is something that people do want. Mm. The other clauses are dispute resolution, disciplinary clauses.
Yep, the disciplinary clause, the previous one was modelled on the nurses anyway. So when the nurses was tweaked, we just tweaked it in there. There's one very slight change that has historically been in there. There's a fitness for work clause where we got about 90% of the clause in. You've got the dispute resolution clause, and you have union rights or union matters type clauses in there. So we actually got a fairly large number of the common clauses in that process.
Okay, so those clauses will look largely familiar to people?
They should do. We'll just see how we go. And also includes family leave and all those clauses that are done by government.
And what are the other changes in the agreement?
The other changes go to, I suppose, tweakings of existing clauses. Going back to that original theme of workload, your advertising for vacancies clause is like the previous one, although they've got a two-week thing in there, you have to advertise fairly promptly. They also have a scenario where if there's a gap between the vacancy occurring, in other words, a person has left, and the new person coming on board, there's an obligation for the manager of that department to either backfill the role or to prioritise the workload so that people aren't trying to do two jobs at once. Mm. This was a never-ending theme in the whole process. The annual leave already covered the 5 weeks. I think managers need to be aware that when they are doing rosters or when they are projecting forward that they have to cover that additional absence. Members will also be aware that in the mental health space, they got 4.5 weeks, which I think was a bit tedious towards trying to roster it or trying to deal with it. But this is a clear 5 weeks, and they did have the support of government. The other areas are performance management. They wanted to have a clear pathway towards that. So we're very creative. We just grabbed the allied health one and dropped it in. Those at the union's a suggestion. The prevention of management and bullying. Members would remember that in the previous one we referred to a WorkSafe document, which was a certain date. That's in there. It's been tweaked a little bit. But also the union's very keen to include the Victorian government of the Victorian Public Sector principles on managing difficult behaviours in the workplace. These are characterised as a guide to use for in resolving it. So those principles will naturally have to be part of the materials that go out with the voting. So it's making sure all the information is actually there. Higher duties, this was an unusual one, but they were keen on it, that when someone does higher duties, they normally go to the next grade, first year of service. And their claim was that if someone has done so much higher duties within the last 5 years, they might go to next grade, year two. So that was something they were very keen on. Sabbatical leave, they were fairly strong on as well. We said no. And in the end, it's the doctor's clause subject to a number of things, like it's got to be agreement.
Nothing.
No agreement, there's no sabbatical leave.
Sure.
Also, it's for grade three and above. And there are other limitations in there as well. So it isn't as though we've given them 6 months' leave. It's got to be agreed by the particular department. So if, for example, pharmacy or psychology says, yes, we want this person to go and study overseas or do research or whatever, if they've got it in their budget and they can convince their CEO, then there's a facilitative clause where that can actually happen.
Which could happen now, I guess, can't it?
It could do. It could do. But the situation is that before there was no reference to it at all. And what the union referred to is you had two representatives from a health service. One was a medical specialist, got the sabbatical leave, got the conference leave, got all the bells and whistles. The other might be a senior psychologist who was a co-author in the research. Nothing. So it was, I suppose, the equity type thing that came up from there.
And so in terms of the operational key points an employer needs to consider, what are they?
It's really date orientated and also budget orientated. I'll go for the budget one first because that's just straightforward dollars. As per our previous bulletin, which highlighted the main points of the agreement, the wage rises are 3.25% for each year that goes forward. So it's 3.25% for January 20, first full pay period on or after 25th of January, 17, 18, 19, 20. So the finance people need to start calculating or accruing, whatever they do, to make sure that the money's there. The other things are more date orientated. The roster protocols, which are mainly, as I said, the 24/7 departments, they will come into place when the agreement comes into place. Currently, I'm working with the directors of pathology and pathology managers in Metro Melbourne, and we're having a workshop on the 23rd of August to just make sure that their roster protocols can actually deal with the new restrictions. Those restrictions go to you really only work one weekend in three. If you have a series of five night shifts, you actually get 2 days off at the end. No shift starts before 6 a.m. So their things are being worked through with our...
With your reference group.
With the reference group, yeah. But we just need to look at those very fine rosters on a 24/7 cycle, which could often include multiple departments to make sure that it's compliant. The other thing that's coming up quickly, I should say, is the progression from grade one to grade two. When we did the agreement in April and May, we had a date of November, thinking that's a long time away. We're at the end of August and we're still waiting to get approval. So this is something which involves an HR process within the pathology labs where they look at the grade one, year seven scientists to see whether they can fulfil the named criteria in there. And if they do, then they'll need to upgrade them as of November. So that could involve an application interview, a number of things. If they're unsuccessful in that process, then they're they can apply again, or they might have to wait till next year.
So, in terms of the next steps once the agreement is approved and progresses. What supports would VHA members anticipate having?
Well, first of all, there's a wonderful bulletin. Yeah. The reference groups continue. We'll be providing sort of material for specific groups. Yeah. For example, the pathology managers group, I'll be working with them. I suspect that with the clinical supervision of psychologists being an increased entitlement, there will be some aspect of working with the senior senior psychology managers in Victoria to actually deal with that. And the other thing is that we've got an implementation guide, and at this stage we've potentially lined up a forum in Melbourne. It'll be a central location, that's just being confirmed, and we've got one in the northern Victoria space in a major rural based hospital that does have a pathology service in-house. And then we'll be picking most probably two other country locations to deal geographically with the rest of Victoria.
So we'll have an implementation guide, we'll have member forums to explain the terms, and also we'll keep the reference groups going throughout the life of the agreement.
We might even have another podcast, you never know.
Well, thank you for your time, Richard, I really appreciate it. Larry thanks you as well.
I haven't heard his comments, but I'll accept that. Thanks, Tim.